folks, and welcome or welcome back to NTI's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima again, and this podcast was brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis, a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for the past 2 decades, 8 years of which he's been actively buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in the city on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So his company has a dedicated loan officer in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions. So you're probably already aware that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or if you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on emil.gorgis, that's emil.gorgis, emil.gorgis@tokyorealty.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. Okay, so we're back with our first JREP, Japan Real Estate Experts panel session for 2022. Started off with a casual chat about holiday ski resorts, networking, and working with friends and family. Then we heard from Emil about the types of mortgages that you can get in Japan, even if you're not a permanent resident, what's involved in those, what the terms are, and how you can get from 80% to 100% financing, if at all. We also talked a bit about submitting offers to purchase properties, when you should put those in, and what's a reasonable price to try and negotiate, how long properties stay on the market, and also about mini and micro studio apartments. Why do they exist? Who are they good for? And how much sense do they make for long-term and or short-term rentals? So plenty of insights as usual. Enjoy the conversation, and I'll see you again on the other side. Right. First episode of the year. Well, first JREP session of the year, anyway.
Yep. Happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year.
I said ake ome to someone, and my wife told me I shouldn't say that to anyone but my very closest friends.
Well, your whole world's your very closest friends.
That's what I keep saying, right?
The whole world's my friends, so I haven't met them all yet. Yeah. I just warn you, the doorbell might ring in a second. So, yes. So it's all happening today.
I think that's one of the main differences between Japanese and foreigner, especially when it comes to networking. Like, she always like, why do you have our clients on your Facebook and they see what I'm doing at home and what, you know, that, why are you inviting that person to like the private party? We work with them. And I'm like, yeah, but everyone's my network, right? You never know who's going to turn into a customer or a business partner or whatnot.
And vice versa. You don't know as well, like how, you know, they can help, you know, solve a problem for you.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I have only two customers who actually turned into friends. It hasn't happened much, but the other way it happens a lot. Like, but we don't work directly with friends and family. We've had some bad experience. We refer them to other people that we trust, and we provide support along the process, but we'd never take them on as clients.
Yeah, like in my case, it's both, like, friends can become clients, you know, when they're ready to buy a house. Like, oh, no, by the way, you know, let's start talking. So that's quite common. But also the other way is quite common, because when we do the house search, I end up going with these people and their families for, like, to many, many viewings. And we're spending so much intimate time together.
And like, you told us that you have to ask them if they're planning to have kids and how many. And you get pretty intimate pretty fast, yeah. Right?
Well, there's that, but also when, like, if they have kids, right? Like, you know, their kids are running around and I fully understand their situation. And often they're just like, they're my age, my sort of similar household structure, kids sort of my age. We're out, like, we spend 4 hours or 5 hours every weekend together. Mm-hmm. So for 3 months or 4 months. right? So, you know, during the process. And it's so we just spend a lot of time, more time, than more sort of one-on-one time, a lot of time that is in the car and going from house to house, house to house. But it's just like us, like me and their family, you know, the husband and the wife and the kids. So you get to really know them quite well. And most people that are in that situation, they're just the ordinary folk. They're not like, you know, some weirdo or something that's just like really a transaction. So yeah, you do sort of become friends with them.
The boundaries become quite vague, I think, when you work. I mean, like if it's a transactional one-off kind of thing, but especially in our case, we're going to be constantly being in contact with them and helping them manage and everything. We exchange emails and phone calls on a daily or weekly basis. It's just going to be that way.
Yeah. I've got my one situation where it tends to be a bit awkward, which we sort of separate, is when it's a close friend, a good friend, and all of a sudden it's like, well, you know, I can help them with a house search, but it's financials. Okay. Hey, like, cause usually we do the bank, the mortgage broking service, right? So I get their tax returns. And if they're like, you know, if they're just an employee, it's a tax withholding slip against Enchosha here. So all of a sudden I know their income and all that personal detail. Or if they're a business owner, then often they need to provide both their income, but also their company's P&L for the past 2 years. Yeah. So all of a sudden I have all of their, you know, very, very private information. And for someone who starts off as a client first, and initially as a client or, you know, someone who calls me from this podcast or this vlog, they're okay giving that because the introduction is as an agent. But when it's a friend, it's like all of a sudden, hey, I've got to hand over all this personal stuff. And even I'm not comfortable doing that. I don't like discussing my finances with others, you know, especially my friends and whatnot unnecessarily. So what we actually do is for those friends, I let them work. Either they can deal with the bank directly. So I set up all the bank stuff, but I let them email or fax or send the documents to the bank directly. So I don't see it. Or I get one of our staff, they can email one of our staff at our office. And so I don't see any of the numbers because to be honest, I don't really care as long as I know ballpark how much they can borrow. That's the only thing that the number is, their income is important for is how much they can borrow, but stuff like their, you know, usually it's fine for them to tell me like their marital status and their residency status and those things. I probably already know it. And we've probably already had that discussion, but it's just income. That's, I'll let them send it through, to one of our staff or to the bank directly because, and I don't really care. I don't need to see it. So yeah, that's the one bit where the friendship aspect is.
It's a bit of a touchy. I don't know. For us, like on the one or two occasions that we have worked with friends, it didn't break the friendship, but anything goes wrong down the track, it becomes really challenging to handle sort of disappointments. Like, why did you do this? Why did you recommend this? And when it's a customer, it's very easy for me to draw the line and say, and look, this is how we work and this is what you need to do and this is what you need to pay and that's how the business relationship works. And if it doesn't work for you, it's okay, we can part ways. But with a friend, it becomes, I don't know, like it's touchy.
Well, similar with my business, it's like, you know, especially when everyone's coming to Japan, it's like, you know, oh, I'll come and, you know, it's not like coming, if you're coming to sleep on my floor, then of course you're able to come and stay in my house for free. But if you rent one of my houses, that's my business. So, and yeah, I'll do you a deal. But at the end of the day, it's like, you know, you're using up calendar days that I could be charging the highest margin for. So I've got to be very, very clear with family and friends about what is, you know, what is business and what is work. But I think, you know, I think, you know, setting the example of having, you know, very clear and clean transactions and not have the money part be an obligation as well. And that's just a good rule of thumb for life, really.
It is the money, but for example, we had the case that really convinced us not to do it anymore is we took on a friend as a tenant, right? Like we had one of our customers had a vacant property and that guy was looking for a place and we ended up renting it to him. Plus he was a foreigner at the start of his way in Japan, not that easy to rent a place. So we were happy to help. And then when they left, there was an argument about what they need to pay or don't need to pay. And, you know, if it was just a standard tenant, then we would have contacted a collection agency and just send them, you know, to try and retrieve the funds. But do you do that with a friend? Like, everything becomes difficult.
Yeah, that's why the transaction needs to be very clear. And so it's not, you know, so did that guy not realize that this is sort of standard operating procedures for when you're a tenant? So
even when it's very clear, though, even with normal tenants, there's always the chance for an argument or the chance for a disagreement. And
I hate that.
It's a lot easier to handle when it's not someone that you know, right?
Yeah. So for people that I've had come as like with sales, when they want to buy, it's very clear. It's like 3% plus 60,000 yen plus tax is the very standard commission for an agent when you're purchasing a property. Mm-hmm. And that's very clear at the outset. And that doesn't change. So there's no additional fee or anything from us, right? So that's quite clear at the beginning. But I have had sort of rental clients that have stayed in my property. So this is the Airbnb and sort of the real estate that I own side of stuff. I use the same contract, even if it's a direct, you know, rental with a friend that wants to stay. I use the same contract as a Japanese contract. And I can modify some terms. For example, you know, if they're saying like it's a shorter duration or whatnot, but it's very, very clearly written. This is the cleaning fee. And this is kind of it's called the Tokyo rule. And it's what the expectation is for, I think we discussed it before, repairing wallpaper. Like what kind of damage to wallpaper after what year? What is the cost? What is the owner's responsibility? What is the tenant's responsibility for damage and natural wear and tear? And that's very clear. And I make sure I explain to them, and we have an English version of this document. I explain to them very clearly, this is what it is. This is what you can expect. But when you move out, it's like, you know, the 40,000 yen or 60,000 yen cleaning fee. Plus you got to give, like, you know, give me 1 month's notice. Yeah. And usually that's not an issue, but especially the cleaning fee and any damage beyond what's in this table. So this is the regular wear and tear that's sort of acceptable. And there are examples of it. And this is what's not. And then this is what's going to be extra. And we're just going to get a renovation company to come and do it if you don't do it yourself. And that's really got to be clear, because I think all of us know it's when people leave and all of a sudden there's an unexpected cost, a surprising cost, like, crap, I have to pay another 30,000, 40,000, 50,000 yen. That's the one that springs up. And you know, it's like, yeah. And this unnecessary tension for a few money yen, right? Really?
Yeah. I don't think it's a matter of, you know, like I would know that I'm in the right, you know, charging what I'm charging. But then after you go through that disagreement, it just, there's like a weight hanging over the relationship, the friendship, right? Like, because you have to go through it, whichever way it was resolved, I just don't want to be in that situation. That's all. Plus I'm representing a customer, an investor who actually owns that property. And then, you know, I'm not on your side, mate. I'm helping you rent a place, but I'm working on behalf of the owner of the place. There's a bit of a dissonance there. So what did you do on the holiday?
I went skiing. I went up to Hokkaido and there was a blizzard or two and we had waist deep powder and my 11-year-old was an absolute champion. So he was stayed with us the whole time and we went down some really gnarly runs, like off piste, waist deep powder. And he nailed it. So proud of him. So
that's awesome.
Good stuff. Mm. Yeah, I saw some of your photos, Tracy.
There was one day we couldn't even go out. It was an absolute blizzard. The next day was incredible, absolutely incredible. So like it was like 50 centimeters of snow every day. And,
yeah, which resort?
Kiroro.
Kiroro is nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I mean,
long runs.
Food and Bev. Food and Bev was a bit of a, you know, you're very, very much a captive audience and resort prices. So that hurt us a little bit. But the snow was just fantastic. So the fireworks at New Year's Eve, and which is rare for New Year's Eve. It was fun. It was a fun time.
You're over there with New Year, the New Year period.
Yeah, we went from the 30th until the 6th. That was a good long time.
Ooh, that was a solid break. We went to Nozawa Onsen.
Ooh, nice.
Which is good. Yeah. And so New Year's Eve and New Year's Day, the 31st and 1st, it dumped like 75 centimeters and then 60 centimeters.
Yep.
So you got 1.5 meters and we got there on the 3rd and we're there for like 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
Which is fantastic. It's just beautiful, beautiful.
That area is becoming really popular with Australians, right?
Sorry?
Nozawa, it's massive for Australians.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I've got a friend who's a real estate agent in Australia. Sorry, my cousin. He's trying to buy property in Nozawa Onsen, and you have to know people. You can't just sort of, you know, everything is off the books. It's not. It's just not possible to buy. That's
what we exist for.
I know. So yeah. So now that I know you, Zuf, yeah. I will be introducing you to him. But he's obviously not able to come up right now.
Yeah. No. Remote. Remote is all the people have been doing for the last couple of years, but they're pretty happy with it. There are good deals to be had, especially in places that rely on tourism.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Well, actually, after we get off this call, that's what I'll do. I'll introduce you to my cousin. So, and Zib, what did you do?
Stayed home and worked. Sorry, it's not nearly as exciting. We took, my son and I took a few days off. We got a vacant apartment, it actually belongs to my mom when she's here in Japan, but she hasn't come for a while. So we go there every few weeks or once a month or once a month or two, just to give mom a break and give us a break from mom. And then we eat junk food and watch movies and play board games. And
I approve with this philosophy as a mom, as a working mom. I approve of this philosophy. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So where's this apartment? Can I send my son and her husband there too? Sure.
We we'll give you a good Airbnb kind of price.
Oh, good. Yeah.
He needs a place to get away.
Yeah, it's crucial actually. Like I need a holiday myself. I haven't gone on holiday for a while, but I do go out like for an overnight excursion once in a while and come back in the wee hours of lunch. So I get my short fixes, not anything long, but yeah.
Yeah, it's very really important. So Zib, you said you had a story to tell us. So
oh, no, just I referred a client or potential client to Emil, and let's not mention him by name, but he's been living in Japan for about 4 years now, so steadily employed in Japan. He and his wife are both non-Japanese, and he was approved for a mortgage loan, so they want to move away from rentals and buy their old home, their new home. So first off, they were approved for a homeowner's mortgage, which I know Emil's mentioned that it does happen, but it is still a bit surprising for me because I thought if you're not permanent resident yet, it could be a bit challenging. But they were approved for about 80%, and he's now on the lookout for 100% loan, which he said he actually spoke to some people in similar situations who have received it. And I didn't even know that was a possibility if you're not a PR.
Yeah, so I spoke to him this morning. Actually, we had like a nice solid 1 hour conversation. So, and just anyone listening, so generally what happens when people are interested, like they're curious about buying a place. And although this particular client had already spoken with banks and gotten some approvals or like some ideas, like informal sort of discussions with the bank saying, okay, yeah, you can borrow this much or that, etc. Usually what happens is, you know, we just arrange a call. Like he sent me an email, like if you sent me the intro email, they reached out, I just gave him my number. He gave me a call this morning. And we spoke for about an hour about his very specific situation and his financing options, et cetera. And yeah, so he'd already gone and done sort of all the research and stuff like that and came back. So when I spoke to him, he seemed quite knowledgeable. He's saying, well, I can get 80% financing and this is how much I can borrow and stuff. And that's pretty much the information I would have told him. But he was like, well, but I have some friends who are also a similar situation that got 100% financing and they don't have permanent residency. And I said, well, look, the only, like, the banks that I know that will give you 100% financing without permanent residency, you need to meet some other conditions, okay? One is you need to either have a Japanese wife or, like, your spouse needs to be Japanese or or permanent residency, right? And he goes, but he said, no, that's not the case, okay? But even his friends as well, that's not the case. The other requirement is you need to be living in Japan more than 5 years, and working at the same company for more than 5 years. You have to be married, even if your spouse is not Japanese. You need to be married, and you need to have been resident in the same house for at least 3 years.
Even as a tenant, even if you're renting.
As a tenant, because they want, if they're going to stability and they want someone who's not just going to sort of move to another country. That's why so these other signs, if you don't have permanent residency, you don't have proof of long-term residence, like that your commitment to the country, they're going to look at these other factors that they try to weigh out, right? They want to give you the loan. And I said to him, like, so in your case, you haven't been here for 5 years. So I know that's definitely not an option for you. But your friend that did get it, was it with this bank? And did he meet these conditions? And he goes, yeah, he has been here for 7 or 8 years. And yes, it was the bank that I was talking about. Also, that particular bank no longer is doing that because they stopped in April, because April's when they changed the policies. On April 1st of 2020, so not last year, the year before, they stopped because they had given it to a few foreigners, but they basically left and defaulted on the loan. And so they changed the bank, it's Mega Bank, changed the policy overall. So you can't really get that anymore. It could still be on a case-by-case basis, but previously it was straight up, yep, you can get it. Now it's like, for the most part, no, you can't get 100% financing. If you're straight up, both the couple is foreign. And also you need to speak Japanese. And when they speak Japanese, like just basic conversation level, you don't need to be able to read the contract. Yeah. So I explained that to him and he's sort of aware. He said that some of his friends had tried the local ginkgo, like Yokohama Ginkgo or Tama Bank, or these, what do you call it, like the trust banks or credit unions. And you can sort of try for the local areas. Those banks don't have we don't have a direct relationship with those banks. And we cannot submit documents on someone's behalf. We can't inquire directly on behalf of the client. And the local banks will also assess it more at a branch level. So they need to kind of know the person and the bank manager needs to sort of really look at the person and have a feel for it. And then he'll request to the underwriters whether or not they're okay. So they don't have just a generic policy when it comes to people that don't fit the exact criteria. So it's hard for us to give a definite no, but for the mega banks and whatnot, we're pretty confident with it's a definite no. And so they may be able to work something out, but for the most part, it's a no-go.
Another agent I've spoken to mentioned that some of the developers which are selling brand new properties or some of the bigger nationwide real estate agencies have different relationships with some banks. And in those cases, it might be possible, but not with your typical run-of-the-mill agency bank relationship, right?
Yeah, correct, correct. So some of the, Mitsui Fudosan, they're building massive developments. They actually have a bank that's tied in with that development, right? So in those cases, yes, they may be able to get, a non-PR holder, like just a single guy, in his 30s who works and just wants to buy an apartment within a brand new building, won't be used, a brand new development. Then, yeah, they may be able to get 100% financing at reasonable rates. Without permanent residency, but that's not a general, off the mill kind of loan.
Yep. Yeah. Understood.
Yeah. So, and the discussion with him was, look, he's about 12 months away from getting PR. So look, it's very easy actually to get, if you don't have permanent residency, but you are fully employed and you're resident of Japan, you can get 80% financing.
Yep.
That's not a secret. So anyone who's like, oh, look, if they're willing to put down a 20% deposit, let's say a 50 million yen loan, $500,000 loan, if you're willing to put down 10 million yen plus about, another, 3 million yen of closing costs, so 13 million yen, the bank will loan you the rest. And I tell people, if you're only about, 6 to 12 months away from getting permanent residency, once you get PR, it's like, and in this case, without your referral, he actually met all the employment criteria very well. He's a Seishin at a listed company. Okay. He's been there for almost 4 years. So in terms of employment situation and income, perfect for a loan. The banks will love him. And it's at a listed company, a very, very large organization. It's just his residency requirement that was an issue. And because he's only, you know, 12 months away from getting his permanent residency. I said to him, look, wait till you get your PR, and all of a sudden you can save, instead of paying, you know, 10 million yen down payment, you can pay nothing. And the bank will actually give you 105% loan. So that's the, you know, the full 50 million yen for the property, plus another 3 million yen for closing costs. So they'll give you 53 million yen. It's like nothing out of pocket.
Yeah.
I've got a client actually doing that now. They're buying a house and the property is like 41 million and their loan is for 44 million. So they're getting 41 million for the house and another 3 million for all the closing costs. Their out of pocket is about 50 or 60,000 yen, like $500, $600 to buy a brand new house.
Yeah.
So I said to him, look, you know, just wait a year to get your PR and then you can save your $100,000 of cash. Right.
Yeah, whatever you're paying for rent for a year is not going to be that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, in some situation, now let's say you've got to wait, you know, 10 years, like the standard route, if you're not on a highly skilled professional visa or something like that, and you have to wait the standard 10 years to get your permanent residency, and you're only 4 years into it. It's like, hold on, you're 6 years away from getting, being eligible for this 100% financing situation. Well, if you're 6 years away, then look, maybe it's worth putting down a 20% deposit. Yeah. Because waiting 6 years, paying rent for 6 years is not going to really outweigh that. Of course, that's assuming you have the cash. But if you're only 12 months away from getting PR, get the PR because the financing terms are much better. You get to keep, you know, 20, like an extra $100,000 or $200,000 of cash.
Is interest also a bit lower in those cases?
And no, I mean, like even with the 80%, one, the interest is about 0.5%. Okay. So whether you're 80% financing or 100% financing, the interest rate is, you know, the 0.5. It doesn't change.
We interrupt this broadcast. I always wanted to say this. We interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, or if you just need summer quiet to hide away from the world. So they offer a variety of options for families, for corporate relocations, or simply if you're transitioning between homes in Tokyo. Now, the properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So really, the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They've got fast, unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens, and they're just a delight to stay in, a fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know they're tiny, they're noisy, fine for a night or two if you're on your own, but long-term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profits or a holiday home that you want rented out when not in use via short-term stays, drop them a line today. See how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth your visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at emil.gorgies, G-O-R-G-E-E-S, at tokyorealty.jp.
Yeah.
But if basically the bank wants you to have more skin in the game. So they want you to put a 20% deposit. Like you can still borrow just as much, but they want you to have 20% in the property because they just fear that you may leave the country. Right? That you have a higher risk when you're not permanent resident. You and you nor your spouse are actual Japanese citizens or permanent residents. If you get a better job offer, you can just go and leave and they're stuck with the unpaid mortgage. So, but if you have $100,000 contributed to the property, you're not going to leave so easily.
It kills me that people actually don't mind just buggering off and defaulting on a mortgage. Like, why wouldn't you just keep paying and rent the place out?
Oh, yeah, no. Like that would make perfect sense, right? And I don't think it happens too much. Anyone who's done it, yes, but I think they just, all it takes is a handful of people to do something bad and burn that bridge and they stuck. You know, maybe they bought something that really wasn't suitable and wasn't good even as a investment. Or, you know, maybe they'll just like, anyone who's going to do that, maybe they just don't have the savviness to realize, well, what do you have here? Okay. And what are the opportunities that you've just left on the table by just leaving and defaulting on the loan?
Yeah, and so you don't know that person. When we talked about tenants, it's like you say, it just takes a handful of dumb foreigners to make it difficult for the rest of us.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, apart from that, everything's going like, that's right. There's one more story. And I touched on this last time and I want to come back to it. There was a house that we were talking about that got built by the river and it was fantastic. It's only 15 years old, but the previous owner had done some extensions. They've extended the balcony and they built out the loft area. Okay. And they built out the loft. So it's no longer eligible for, it's considered like a over-regulation build. And it's built like the building doesn't match documentation. So the banks weren't financing it. And our client sort of, he really liked it. We tried to talk with the bank, but they're like, the bank that was able to give him a loan, because his situation was a bit unique, like, no, sorry, we'll give you money, but not for this property. This property is not one that we will accept because it's been modified from original and it no longer meets regulations. So we sort of, you know, left that. And then my client sort of, he did go to one of the local banks and he spoke with them and showed them the property. And they said they'd give him about like 60% of the property value for a loan. So he had to put in almost like, you know, 200,000, like 20 million yen cash by himself. He's like, yeah, no, I want 100% financing. This, you know, 200,000 yen is a bit over the top. Now he called me up the other day and said, actually, you know what? We thought about it over the year. We love the place. We're willing to put that cash down. Okay. So like, okay, great. I reached out, but it's already under contract. Someone else has put it under contract. But that contract may fall through. I don't know the details about it. The seller said, look, the person has sort of signed the contract and he's put some terms and clauses in the contract, which because of the situation of the property, they're still waiting for some other assessment. So depending on that, it may fall through. All agents are closed, like the big real estate agents are closed Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and today's we're recording this on Wednesday, and Monday was a holiday. So I'm hoping to hear back from the seller's agent on Thursday or Friday with whether or not that has gone through. And if not, then we'll be able to jump on it. So fingers crossed. Sometimes sometimes it's like there's some things we can control, some things we cannot. One thing in this case, we tried really, really diligently we tried many, many banks for financing, many situations. Eventually, we were able to find one bank that would approve this property, but only to about 60%. That wasn't really good enough at the time. But now we're in a position where, hold on, actually, he thinks, you know what, he can make it happen. So that's one thing that we were sort of diligent in, sort of checking all the banks and finding what we can get. And then finally, now it's waiting for the stars to align. hopefully that one sort of falls through. So it's always about a bit of balance, but I do like how this particular client was very, very thorough. And even though I'd exhausted sort of my mega banks that I can deal with, there was one that he looked at, like one of the local banks, and he went and met with them and spoke with them and got all the sort of checks and approvals. So he knows that's how much you can get. And the agent also knows that. So hopefully now the stars align. But I often tell people, we need to be as thorough as we can and make sure we don't lose the deal because of our inaction. We need to spend as much time and be as thorough as possible to make sure we get all the right documentation, everything necessary early on. And often this means getting tax documents or home loan sort of pre-approvals and discussing with banks very, very early, knowing where we stand. So when we find the right property, we can jump on it.
And people don't realize if they haven't purchased or haven't been active in Japan's property market, people don't realize how quickly the market actually moves here. I mean, attractive deals can be taken, you know, they can be spoken for in a matter of days from listing, especially if the property is not too expensive. This is not like, I know in Australia, like we often see a house on the market for a very long time, like a good 6, 7, 8, 10 months. Doesn't happen much here. And if it does, there might be something wrong with the property. They get snatched super quick in Japan.
Yeah, they're both super quick. And it depends on some properties are just crap. They're going to stay in for a while because they're not worth it. But the properties that, you know, usually for foreigner, like, and I deal with family homes, right? So it's that usually people go there and it has to be a nice place. There's got to be something like charm to it, either the location or it's got to be right for a family. And some of them are not right and they're going to be a struggle. But some that are quite right, especially if a foreigner likes it, foreigners tend to have slightly higher standards, higher sort of expectations. So a foreigner likes it and it's at a good price, then it means it's actually pretty good in the market. And with my clients, we've generally looked at a dozen properties, 2 dozen properties. So when we find the right, like when we walk into the right one, the client kind of knows pretty quickly. They're confident. They've seen it. They go, oh yeah, this one I actually really like. They don't need to sit on it so long. They walk right in and they go, yeah, this is fantastic. And so when we get to that stage, often it means, yeah, this is a nice property. And when we're actively looking, we're looking every week or every other week. So it's not a property that's been sitting on the market for 3 months and then we find it.
Yeah.
We'll see it pretty early. But every agent is doing that with their clients. Every agent is like, once they've got listings, they're looking for the new ones. And the first, you know, few weeks are when there's lots of viewings and lots of excitement about a particular property. It's quite rare that my clients that we're searching for, I'm like, oh, hey, check out this property. But it's one that's already been listed for 3 months. No, because we would have seen it when we started the search. So that's why the good properties that make a lot of sense will generally go quick, because people that are actively engaged in the search will be able to make the decision very quickly and jump at it. And the big difference between how the Japanese market works in terms of the purchase process versus the Australian market is we don't auction prices.
Yeah.
There's no increase. It's not like there's never a situation where, oh, this, you know, let's say the property is 50 million yen and I'll say, okay, great, we want to buy it at 50 million. The agent won't call another potential buyer and say, look, I've got one offer at 50. Do you want to offer 51 million, 52
million?
That's
one of the things I love most about Japan is that it doesn't happen here.
Fixed price. It does not. It's if you go in at the asking price, I know, like if I tell my clients the opposite, it's like we see a property for 50 million. They're like, we love it. And we know we've been looking in the area. Everything's 50, like 55, 54, 55. This one is like, you know, 5 million yen cheaper. And it's like really, really nice. Checks all the boxes. Nothing wrong with it. When I look, if you want to offer 48 million, then you can do that. But chances are someone else is going to jump on and offer 50. Yeah. And whoever offers the asking price gets it.
This happens to so many of our first-time clients. They come in, okay, let's offer 20% off, 15% off the listed price. And that's number one, it's not going to be accepted. Number two, there's a chance you might actually offend the seller and he's not going to receive another offer from you. And number three, it'll just get taken right under your nose. Like this is what they're going to be getting for it. Mm-hmm. There's a limit. It just doesn't work like that here. But people have to lose a few really lovely properties that they really wanted before they actually realize that we know what we're talking about.
I mean, I just want to jump in there because, you know, there's not enough attention on me right now and I need to bring it back to me.
I'm in a room with lots
of testosterone every week. So I'm, you know, 2022 is going to be my year for making sure that I'm heard. But what I was just going to say is that I'm actually often looking for properties that aren't suitable for other people, because especially if they're quirky, if they're weird, or, you know, there might be something wrong for someone who wants to live in them full time, but I can make them work as a short-term rental. And I've done that a number of times, because I can amp up the charm factor or the novelty factor. Or, you know, there's one of my properties which does exceptionally well. It's 2.5 meters wide as a house, and it's tall and skinny. It has zero closets. It is, to live there long term, it would be a nightmare, but it's 15 minutes walk to Shinjuku. It's in a great location and it sells really, really well for short term rentals because it is 2.5 meters wide. I mean, the number of people have done Instagrams where they've got their arms out and they're lying down at the front of the property and they're showing how narrow it is. It's a really interesting selling point. So I'm always on the hunt for ones for properties that don't rent well for families or for long-term tenants, but they've got some quirk in them that I can really play up. So
have you seen the IKEA 6 meter or whatever it was, 5 meter square room?
I mean
the challenge,
that's completely clickbaity, of course.
Yeah,
I think Muji did something similar.
I'll find it and share it while Tracy's going.
It was like CN a month or something, you know, and it really was a vertical lift. Like, you know, if you're sleeping standing up, like you're in a coffin or something, it'd be great. But
so sorry, Zach, can you, what is it? I've never heard of it.
Okay, it's a loft. So imagine a tiny apartment, which is.
Let me share the screen, Tracy. I'll show it on the screen while we're talking.
I'll have to let you share the screen.
Yes, you have to allow me to share. See, you are in control. Don't worry about the.
There we go.
She could have muted us at any time.
Yeah,
I could mute you. I could change your names to whatever you want at any time. There you go. It's $1 a month. I thought it was like Sen yen a month.
No. It's a Hyakuen a month, and it's what's 107 square feet? That's like what, 30 square meter? No, what is that?
Okay, it's a really interesting. I mean, obviously, you have to be young and fit and thin, I think, just to live in it.
3.5 jaw, Jesus.
Yeah. It's 3.5 jaw, but then it's got a living above that kitchen bathroom area. It's got a little loft, which is a single bed. I think it's a single bed or a semi-double bed. It's a student apartment.
Can you show me, is there a photo of the loft area? Because I've got.
No, not in these. I was looking for that too.
I've got some apartments.
Oh, no, hang on. Keep going down. No, that's the sofa. There's a sofa bed in there. There it is. That's the loft. Mm-hmm.
Ooh, okay.
The loft is actually not that bad, but the downstairs area is horrible.
I mean, look, if you were a student, but who designs these places? That's what I want to know. Like, who is the architect that is thinking that this is a suitable living arrangement for someone long term? I mean, there's no, it's basically putting a building and squeezing in maximum amount of heads in beds, which is really not a great standard of living.
I've got three of these apartments, Tracy. Let me explain what it is. So I got into the Airbnb game quite early on, so I was subleasing quite a few apartments. I'll go to some owners, like I'll find some properties that were good deals, and I'd ask the owners if I could do Airbnb with them or short-term rentals, and I got permission. And when I think I had like 12 at the peak of Airbnb, and now it's reduced to about 6. So although real estate, you know, sales is my main business as a side, I've got the short-term rentals and stuff as well that I do. And so I've got three of these in the same building, and mine are like 10 square meters. No, it's in very similar size to that. It's like, and it's very similar layout, to be honest. Like, I mean, it's a small box. I think the first floor is like Gorokujo, so a little bit, maybe a little bit bigger than that. And they're actually on the third, on the top floor of this three-story building. It's a wooden building, and on the top floor, so the top can be high like how it is. Right. My lofts actually come down on an angle, so they can be high like how this is. The floors down below are only 6 jaw, like 10 square meter apartments without a loft. My three are all on the top floor, and they have the lofts exactly like this.
But not so this size, right?
Sorry?
not this size. It's got to be bigger than that. We have some apartments with lofts as well, but they would be at least 15, 16 square meters.
No, I think they're 10.
So how many jaw at the bottom level?
Like six.
Yeah, oh, see, six jaw, that's 3.5 jaw at the bottom.
Oh, no, but that's 3.5 jaw. If you go back to the floor plan.
Oh, that's 3.5 jaw of, like, that's not including the bedroom, including the kitchen and bathroom.
Yeah, that looks like only the bedding space is 3.5. Oh, yeah,
there we go.
Yeah, that bedding space there is 3.5, and then they got the bathroom and kitchenette, like the... Oh, hold on. There's no shower. Oh, yeah. There's no shower. Oh, yeah. There is. There's a shower.
There is. There is
shower. Okay. Shower and a kitchen.
Yeah. So my one's very similar, to be honest. So that's why I'm looking at these going, wow, you know what? I should just redo my whole apartment. Just go everything that they got here in IKEA, like in this show, like this showroom. That yeah. I can just replicate that and make it like the IKEA room.
And that's a real one person place. And obviously, you know, for short term rental, you need to have a spot for luggage. Otherwise, you know, where are you going to put your bag? You've got to be a light traveler.
Yeah. Every complaint I've had about people that are staying was, oh, there's no room for luggage. And usually I say, look, it's good for two people, a couple, like not like two mates are willing to squeeze in. Because again, this is, you know, 15 minutes walk from Shinjuku.
Yes.
Right. And so for short-term stays, again, it's a bit quirky and whatnot, but 15 minutes from Shinjuku, it's very much for budget travelers. They want to be
as long as you know your target customer and they're up for the experience, then it's a good match. I think just being transparent with what the experience that you're offering and the price. So that's just difficult. Yeah.
But going back, I guess, to the point you made earlier is like, who builds these and why do architects build such a property that's not going to be livable? So the building, I've only got three rooms in it, but there's two buildings and there's 12 apartments in each building, right? And I've got three at the top with the loft, but the other ones, it's largely international students that live there. Just that's it, because it's cheap and it's great central location.
Some of these places actually used to be dorm buildings where they used to have a shared bathroom and a shared toilet. So it might have been renovated to fit like include all of it inside that tiny space. But maybe
I think what Trey's mentioning with this one is to be honest, like these small size, like maximized room, like a Rockajaw room. And if it's in a good location, like you can't really do that kind of space out in like in the boonies, like far out, because people that are going to live all the way there need a bit more space, and for only just a few thousand yen. But when you're in Shinjuku or Shibuya, then you're like, you know, I'm paying, the difference is 60,000 yen a month for that size, or 80,000 yen a month. Because you're talking 50% extra in floor space, because the loft doesn't really count. So if you go from 10 square meters to 15 square meters, it's doubling the rent.
Yeah, one of our customers has an apartment in central Fukuoka, like right next to Hakata Station. Mm-hmm. And that one's 12 and a half square meters. So it's no loft. So it's, you know, basically even smaller than this one for living space. And it's never been vacant for longer than the couple of weeks that it takes to renovate it. I mean, there's
the rental like?
No. 25,000 yen a month or 30,000.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. So, but the thing is, like, so you get up in 25,000, you want an extra 2-3 square meters, like, which is a 20-30% increase in price. It's you're going from 25 to 30,000 yen a month.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're going like for student type accommodation, you want to live central, you're going from 60,000 yen a month to 90,000 yen, or from 80 to 100, 120, just to go from, just to have like the bare essentials are bathroom, toilet, kitchenette, and bed area, right? And that's generally be a sofa bed, because you can convert, it's either a living room or a bedroom. I don't need to pay 50% extra to have a dedicated living room when I'm sleeping.
If you're but like Tracy was saying, so I know Tracy, you basically aim mainly for families in your home stays, but there is the big market for properties like these, right?
Well, the problem is, well, for short term, so there's a couple of things. There's a couple of points I wanted to bring up, and I am conscious of time. But so there's a couple of things. First of all, with a short term rental on, if you're paying 60,000 yen a month and you're trying to do arbitrage, you're not gonna make enough on a short term rental basis. Much more than you're going to make on a like a regular chintai. Yeah. The real meat of short-term rentals is where you do have the 2, 3, 4 bedroom places, and you do have larger groups because there's a lot of competition at that level, at that budget level. You're competing with hostels, you're competing with the business hotels, and you know when you're renting something at 3,000-4,000 a night. You know, there's a lot of weirdos who rent at that price, or they're people that, you know, when they don't have much skin in the game, they're not going to take that much care of it. So there's a lot of factors. I don't think there's enough meat because you still have to do the same amount of work to manage the guests and manage the cleaning as you do for something that you're earning 100,000 a month as opposed to something that you're making 1 million yen a month.
Would it make a difference if you own the entire building and you've got 12 of these?
If you own the entire building, I would recommend that you would knock out a couple of those walls and convert some of those single studios into 2, 3, 2 bedroom, 2 bathroom, for example, which are very hard to get. So 3 bedroom, 3 bathroom, which is what a lot of especially Asian travelers want. You know, if they're coming from Singapore or Malaysia, they're wanting an ensuite bathroom. You could have a building where you have 12, 15, 1Ks, knock out a couple of walls and convert them into a 3-bedroom, and you're going to make more. You're going to make more on a monthly basis with less work than running individual properties. Or you rent out the whole lot. So
that's exactly correct.
Yes. See, I know what I'm talking about, Emil. I've been doing this a long time. Yeah. So
the concept's quite simple. It's like, you know, if you got a property that's 60,000 yen a month, and let's just say easy numbers, like you make 50%, you know, extra, right, in terms of profit in the short term stay, you're making 30,000 yen a month, which is not a lot of room for buffer. Like if the guest complains about the mattress or if the bed breaks or something like that, a bed is going to cost the same whether it's getting, you know, for this property or if it's in a larger property. Yep. So if you have a property that's 300,000 yen a month, so you're making 150,000 of profit on it, you can go and change a mattress. You can just, the guys don't like pillows, you can spend, you know, 5,000 yen on pillows and go, because they're paying more than that per night. Mm-hmm. Right? Whereas if you're only making 5,000 yen on the guest total stay and he complains about pillows, it's like, well, hold on, can I spend 5,000 yen just because this one guest is not happy? Whereas one guest paying, you know, 500,000 yen, well, yeah, I can give them new pillows. And also one guest versus three guests, etc. It's definitely, I agree.
And the other thing that what I do as well is I just don't sell a bed, Ziv. I sell an experience. So when I have a family who's coming to Japan for 2, 3 weeks, for example, they're coming in and they're, you know, they are spending a lot of money. They've got a lot of skin in the game, but they're also prepared to spend a lot more money on things like tours, on babysitting, on all the other things that I can drill in and really make some money on.
Which a budget traveler is
not. A budget traveler is not interested in that. They're interested in the cheapest bed. And you know what? Like, that doesn't really bring me much joy as a business owner. It's like, I've been in business a long time. I want to do something where I'm actually feeling like I'm helping somebody. Yeah, I'm making money off them as well. But
fortunately, there are slumlords who do cater to these kinds of people.
Sure, there's slumlords. Like, you know, but it's not really my business model. It's not really what drives me. I'm not really interested in being a slumlord. Okay. You know, but there are possibilities of doing that. But then, you know, then you end up spending a lot more in the long run because these buildings aren't really well made. And they're noisy and they're, you know, so it's just not my business model. It's not what I'm good at. So I'd rather spend my time on the bigger properties and really look after customers who I can earn a lot more money from. So,
I got to go in a couple of minutes, but sure. we completely skipped our intro. So let's do an outro before we go.
So I'm Tracy. I am the short-term rental minpaku expert, like we've just discovered in this call today. So I've been in short-term rentals in Tokyo for 10 years. I have my own properties. I also manage other people's properties and help them maximize their profits. I also train people on how to maximize profits in this industry here and abroad. So that's me.
Cool. Thank you. Ziv, over to you.
Yeah, so we are buyer's advocates, proxies, and portfolio managers, and we help people, whether they reside in Japan or out of Japan, to purchase, negotiate, do due diligence on. We can also consult them if they want to do it on their own, help them manage their portfolio and exit if and when they want. And we mainly deal with investment properties and holiday homes and also land for development.
All right. And my name is Emil. I'm my title says here, I think it is. I'm a real estate agent here in Tokyo, and I help people find their personal home. I say their dream home, but how about realistic home? I think is more appropriate in Japan, because we're not getting our dream homes that we see in the magazines. I think here we have to settle for something a bit more reasonable. And we also act as a mortgage broker. So we have, we're a licensed agency. So we deal with the banks that are assigned to us. The mega banks. So, or anything about finance and home loans for foreigners in Japan, I know all about that and can help. So please just reach out anytime. We can have a phone call. I have started sponsoring Ziv, your podcast. So this is part of it.
Yes, so this will be the third time people hear about you in this episode now.
Sure. Yeah. So the intro. Yeah. So send me an email. I'm the guy that Ziv introduces now in all of his podcasts.
Me too. I'm a sponsor as well. So for my short term. So this is when people are inbound and they're looking, or they're outbound and they're looking for a short term rental in Tokyo. I'm the person to take care of them.
Ziv, you got some money out of us for good stuff.
That was the entire purpose. We can shut down the JREP, the panel now. So yes, the three of us plus Matt, who's not with us today, who deals in Akiya, in abandoned or otherwise vacant homes, mostly in the countryside, but not only. And the four of us are the Japan Real Estate Experts Panel, or JREP, as we like to be called, or at least I like to call us. And we'll see you all very, very soon. Have a wonderful, hope you've enjoyed
Thanks
a
so
wonderful
much.
Happy New Year.
Pick some goals for 2022.
Yep. Thank you.
See
Buy
you.
Some more
Bye
real
bye.
Estate.
Bye. Bye guys.
All right, so that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this first session of the JREP panel for 2022. Always a pleasure speaking with Tracy and Emil, as well as with Matt. Hope to have him with us again next time. Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. If you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you're already in Japan on some sort of a temporary visa, and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, or if you're considering setting up a local company or a branch office of a foreign company, and you've got any sort of business or visa related inquiries, or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hiroshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com. And he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners. So feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com, and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks, and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating or review on the iTunes Store, on Spotify, or just drop us a line in the comment section of wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again next time. And until then, have a great day or night ahead. Yoroshiku.